Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time for KER Politics. Got a pretty good show lined up for today. We're going to start off talking about the economic situation in China, which after a blistering start in 1978 has slowed down to a very, very difficult time for them right now. From there, we're going to move on. We're going to talk about the meeting between Putin and Kim Jong-un. Then we're going to switch over and talk about the meeting between Biden, Japan, and South Korea. And then, Jimmy, how would you like to wrap it up?
Well, I think we ought to talk. I mean, there's a couple of things out there that I think are important. We could wrap it up in politics. It's certainly the White House getting involved with trying to influence the media on covering up the Biden family as the impeachment inquiry goes forward. And then, you know, the kind of the tide is turning with the media as you get Washington Post writers like David Ignatius, New York Times, Ross Douthat, that they're actually calling for Biden to withdraw. Those are powerful statements.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, and of course, you know, we talked to China here. Let's talk a little bit about this, a little bit about our own inflation and the numbers that came out this week.
Not real good. Also, I'd like to just touch on the fact of Romney's comment about a couple of guys who should not be in the race for president of the United States because of their ages. One is Trump, and of course, one is Biden. Just get an opinion on that. I know we've had some comments about Trump and his age, and that's the reason I'd like to touch on that, Jimmy.
Sure, yeah. Well, let's go ahead and roll into China here and talk a little bit about the problems they're facing.
China, as all of our listeners are aware, back in 1978 was the darling of the world economy. They could do no wrong, and since then, primarily because of Kim Jong-un's insistence on a couple of deals, China is not doing very, very well. The Economist did a major story on that in the most recent edition, and they brought up the fact that in terms of growth, China is at around 3.1% annually right now, and we, they claim, allegedly, supposedly, are at about 5.9% right now. And the thing I find interesting about that 5.9%, Jim, is those are the numbers from the Atlanta Fed, and every single economist really laughs when he hears those numbers now.
Yeah, I don't think that's possible. I think you said the leadership there in China, Kim Jong-un, but I'm sure you meant Xi Jinping. Xi Jinping's policies have kind of put them in a difficult situation. Actually, the entire Communist Party's policies, they have a very big problem with the real estate market right now. That's going to carry a tremendous amount of a debt load because of the government spending, as they were trying to move people from the outlying areas in forced urbanization, almost forced urbanization.
Right.
Not quite as dramatic as it was during the Soviet Union era in Soviet Russia, where they forced, you know, people into the cities and really caused some major problems. But it is significantly causing problems because they overbuilt. And a lot of it has to do with the corruption involved in the developers, the builders, and party members that actually get these subsidized programs through the CCPs, through the communist governments, and then build these massive projects with no market understanding of who's going to fill the need there. And I think their command-controlled political system is in direct conflict with an open and free market. That makes it very problematic for the economy to work. And of course, you know, you've got a lot of other issues. You've got demographic issues with an aging workforce, and of course the one child policy, which really shifted towards mostly male, and those are now older. They're getting into their 50s, 60s, and 70s, and that one child policy. And I think those problems are very significant for China. But the biggest problem with China right now is...
I'd say for China.
Yeah, well, yeah, okay, for China, in China, I would say the biggest problem is that many industries had sacrificed some of their programs. They moved to, in order to move manufacturing, in order to get the cheap labor that was very efficient in China, they were willing to do a lot with the Chinese Communist Party in order to sacrifice their own, you know, whatever principles, policies, if you will, values, morals. And what they're finding out is there's big pushback with some of that. And a lot of companies do not see the benefit of the relationship with the centralized authorities as long-term beneficially for their growth of their companies. Because in fact, in many cases, you've seen where the Communist Party has come in and forced a takeover through their own government-linked corporate leadership to take over production from foreign-owned areas within the economy. And that's very problematic. So what you're seeing is an exit of China from capital, an exit from foreign investment, and an exit from a dependence on their manufacturing facility. And that, combine that with the other problems that they have, the corruption, the intimidation, the political cronyism that's required to do work there, the demographics, and then, of course, the massive subsidies to these real estate programs and other development programs, the Chinese are going to have a very difficult time.
Well, it's interesting, but China has done the same, taken the same action pretty much of late that the United States builders have taken, and that is in terms of new housing, U.S. builders are actually selling the houses before they are completed, and exactly the same thing is happening in mainland China right now, only apparently the Chinese builders are not nearly as careful as the American builders were in that action, Jim.
Well, they're selling, but they're selling to government programs and subsidized housing. And that actually is very problematic because they're not actually filling. There are major urban areas that have had brand new apartments and developments that are completely empty.
Right.
Huge swaths of development. And I think I talked recently about some of the videos, the subsidized programs for EVs, for electrical vehicles there.
Right.
There's really tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of vehicles that are not used because of the subsidy programs,
right,
which cause problems. And another example is bicycles. And I would recommend anybody look up subsidized bicycle programs in China and EV programs and look at some of the videos on these massive stockpiles of basically corrupt production on different manufacturing facilities in order to get the subsidies, but then there's no market for them. And that's the same thing with the real estate market. There's not enough people.
Yeah, Jimmy, isn't it funny how one country will follow another country in terms of their economic actions? They'll take economic actions that didn't work for one country, and they'll try to parrot those actions, and they do it, and there's a huge mistake because that really is something in terms of the housing industry and the EV industry, and I suppose in China also the bicycle industry. Jim, I'd like you to wrap this up. We have approximately 30 seconds left, and then we go on to the next segment.
Yeah, I think we just need to really take a hard look at investment in China, and at the same time, look at the over expenditures their government has, and the same thing that we're doing right now.
Right.
Increasing debt. And let's talk in the next segment a little bit about our own inflation and the new numbers with core inflation and CPI, and what the impact is.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll stick around for a couple of minutes. We had a commercial break. We'll be right back.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
Welcome back. We've got some similarities in the economies of both America and mainland China, and those similar problems are dealing primarily with the inflation in both of the countries. Jimmy, you want to chat about that a little bit?
Well, yeah, partly. I mean, it is a global phenomenon right now with inflation, and that's primarily because of overspending. And what the Chinese have done, okay, you know, you talked earlier in the previous segment about one country doing what others and how they spread to that. You know, most of the world right now is in deficit spending, right? They're spending more than they're actually taking in revenues.
Like people.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's the case, and that's having a big impact on the economy. The Chinese are doing tremendous amount of defense spending, and part of that is to rattle sabers over Taiwan. Part of it is to ensure the stability of their government. Their defense spending is significantly embedded into overall government spending, and it's hard to distinguish how much they're spending. But if you even say that they're spending 1/4 of the amount that the United States is, what some estimates say, you know, we're at about $800 billion, and they're about $250 billion, maybe a little bit more, maybe a little bit less. That does not include a lot of civil programs that are designed for defense in the Chinese system. That focus and that spending targets a specific area. The United States defense spending covers programs throughout the world. So it's a very powerful amount of money, a large amount of money into very specific objectives. So that's always a problem. That is causing deficit spending. They are having economic problems. And of course, the United States, we've now come to $2 trillion in deficit this year alone, putting our overall national debt somewhere around $33 trillion. This is driving up. Obviously, you're having to print more money in order to, you know, pay down your bills, but that's causing the price of bonds to go up as the inflation increases, and the government has to pay more money on that debt. Uh-huh. So these are significant impacts that are comparable, not just in the U.S. and China, but also in Europe and the rest of the world. That's really the G20 group of most powerful economies around the world. They're all facing the same problems because of stupid governance, if you will.
Yes, we are. I agree 100%, Jim.
Yeah, and if we go down and we talk about inflation in the United States, you know, the Bidenomics plan that the administration's been talking about says, oh, they're being successful. Well, inflation rose again with the latest numbers. So the CPI, the Consumer Price Index, is up 0.6%. That's a problem, but the core inflation is up 0.3%, and that's a significant problem, and that's 4.3% year over year. That has a big impact, again, on the debt, on, you know, what the Fed's going to do. They're going to make a decision, I think, in the next 2 weeks on whether they're going to raise rates. Many speculate that they won't raise them this quarter. They're going to wait a little bit, but ultimately, the economic problems are becoming quite severe, and they're not going to get better based on any of the policies that the current Biden administration, or actually anyone around the world, is taking, because they're all spending more than they can take in.
Right. I personally think, Jimmy, we're headed for a major international crash, and I think that's going to happen sooner rather than later. My reasoning is based on one thing, Jim, and that is, all of the economies of the world really are doing very poorly right now.
Yes, and you can't trust the data or the statistics that are being provided, because they are now politically geared and driven in order to support political narratives. And that is incredibly dangerous when you're trying to make decisions in a free market. It's not possible to make good business decisions
in a
market where the information is fraudulent. It is going to be problematic.
And when you get people like Jim.
Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off there.
No, I'm saying I agree 1,000% with you. It's just not going to get any better, I don't think. And I think the only thing our listeners really must be aware of is to get ready for perhaps some very difficult economic times, Jim.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely don't want to be spending on your credit cards. You don't want to be taking out additional debt with high rates out there. You definitely want to be thinking about how to protect yourself and be prepared for problems, because we've got problems with our energy sector. And if we have a cold winter again, that's going to be a real problem. We know that energy prices, the reason why the CPI is up because of a spike in energy prices. And what is the Biden administration doing? Jennifer Granholm, the Secretary of Energy, and of course the advisors, what did they do? They had Biden shut down leases on ANWR, the Alaska National Wildlife Reserve, for oil drilling, which means that the investors and the companies drilling for oil don't have the opportunity to actually increase supply in the U.S., which means buying from overseas, and those prices are going up. That's going to be problematic to us, this push to wind and solar and all the grids that are dependent on some of those resources. Those are very problematic. That's going to be a problem. Energy drives the economy ultimately, and we're just seeing a complete disaster in policy to meet bogus climate agendas that are actually fraudulent and more becoming more and more apparent to many. But the incompetent political hacks that are running most of the decision making inside Washington right now are going to push us into disaster.
More and more people are saying that, Jim. You know, I want to close out this particular short segment by really emphasizing the fact that the economy of the world is really, when you look at the Cold War that's going on between us and Russia, the very definite Cold War that's going on between America and China and other parts of the world, when you realize that, you realize how tenuous the economic situation is on planet Earth right now for all of the countries. Jimmy, got a minute left. Why don't you wrap it up?
Yeah, so I do want to point out a very specific comment in congressional hearing from the Energy Secretary, Jennifer Granholm. When asked about the impact of the ANWR reserves being shut down, her comment was it has no impact on oil prices.
Uh-huh.
That is an absolute incompetent lie or a deception. When you reduce potential inventory or direct inventory, it's going to have an impact. And it's going to have a very big impact on speculative markets. And so those are driving up prices. There's no way that we're going to avoid some of these problems because of the policies this administration has set forward. They continue spending and they continue lying to the American people and giving false statistics. Yeah. Every single BLS statistic on labor had to be adjusted downward on jobs over the last quarter. So
no,
it's a very big problem.
Jim, you got to take a break for the top of the hour news. We will be right back with a couple more segments.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Back time for segment 7 of the Corlin Political Report, featuring Jim McKinney and me, Big Al. Hope you enjoyed the top of the hour news. I don't know how you can enjoy something like that, but I said it anyway. I would guess that the top of the hour news today on the stations which carry the Corlin Political Report probably was very similar to the news that I watched last night. I don't think there have been any big changes. Jim, am I crazy or am I correct?
I don't know. Everything's happened so fast.
Yeah, they do.
There's some crazy things that have been happening.
Question about that. The one thing that happened last night that really intrigued me, I spent a lot of time going over it, and that was the meeting at the space rocket base of Russia between Vladimir Putin, where they ate crab cakes and, if I'm not mistaken, the famous Russian fish, which escapes me right now, and toasted the elimination of the band of evil, which they define as being headed up by America. Any comments, Jim?
Well, I think it's a if the Putin government is dependent on the North Koreans for any legitimacy, I think that's kind of a dangerous move on and a desperate move on Putin's part.
Yeah,
it's not like Kim Jong-un is well respected around the world.
Exactly.
And of course, as this ongoing conflict, this ugly ongoing conflict in Ukraine, of course, Eastern Ukraine and Crimea continues, it's problematic. And it looks like by most reports that the deal is to cooperate on defense and weapon systems between the two because of the inability of the Russians to sustain their industrial base to support ongoing operations.
Yeah. It's give me some comments, if you would, on the Ukrainian attack on the Russian assets in the Black Sea, would you?
Yeah, so one of the key elements from a strategic point from Russia is to maintain that Black Sea fleet.
Right.
And that Black Sea fleet is it's headquartered in Sevastopol in Crimea. And of course, this has been a big problem throughout history, but certainly since the 2015 takeover of Crimea by Russians from Ukrainian government forces and the attempts to create the land bridge, logistics supply land bridge from mainland Russia through the eastern part of Ukraine down to Crimea,
right,
shows that the importance strategically of the Black Sea Fleet. Well, if it's at risk to long-range cruise missiles from NATO countries providing them to the Ukrainian government, that makes the sustainability and the cost of maintaining that Black Sea Fleet very, very high for Russian defense ministry. And apparently in the last night, you know, yesterday's raid and maybe another one today, I understand, there's just a recent one, there was a submarine damaged, a ship in that was under repairs in dry dock was damaged, and a third ship was damaged. If you start taking in, and we've already seen a number of major, in fact, one of the biggest in the region, a Russian cruiser, taken out and sunk, basically made inoperable by Ukrainian forces. If you continue to see this, then the Russians are going to have to make a very interesting strategic calculation on how to protect that and what the response would be. But most importantly, can they sustain and protect the long-term viability of a base in Crimea? And that's certainly what the NATO advisors, I'm sure, and of course the Ukrainians are looking at, how to take away one of the key elements of the entire purpose of Russian intervention into the region. Take away the fleet.
There's no much value in
Crimea.
Let me ask you and the listeners a question. Whoever thought in a couple of years ago that Ukraine would be able to put up as effective a fight against Russia, admittedly a defensive action, who would have thought that Zelensky and his folks would have ever been able to be as effective as they are against the Russians? I certainly never believed it, Jim.
Well, as I said from the initial stages of the invasion, the United States, NATO countries have been working through the Partnership for Peace program with Ukrainians since, you know, the early 1990s after the dissolution of the Soviet Union. And those training and that relationship evolved a long time ago. And that's one of the reasons why Putin was concerned and why he went ahead and took action, was he didn't want that relationship to continue down the road. That was a strategic threat to him. So I expected that there would be a better defense than many people said. And I talked about it often. We've talked about it on this radio show. The problem is a lot of people still don't recognize the damage and the loss to both sides. I mean, there's no one winning this war. And I just want to make that clear. There is no one, everyone's suffering. Everyone's losing this war. But the people the government that started this effort was in 2014 by taking Crimea and attempting to undermine Eastern Ukraine and take control of that. And then it continued with an invasion where they actually moved forces from Belarus and from mainland Russia into areas near the capital of Ukraine, Kiev. And there's no question who initiated this war, whether it was justified or not. That's a completely different question. But the problem that many people don't realize is the pain and the impact long term to Russia that this will have on them, even though they're still, exporting gas and oil from Russia to Western Europe. There's still, some financial capabilities out there. The long-term suffering and pain for the Russian people, and of course for the Ukrainian people, is going to be measured in decades, not in months or years. And the longer it goes, it's a terrible tragedy, in my view.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And of course, it's going to be measured in decades and not in years. No question whatsoever. I think nobody, perhaps, was more surprised than Vladimir Putin when the Ukrainians put up as effective a defense as they did, Jim.
I mean, it is absolutely, you're right. I mean, there had to be, he has to be questioning. Obviously, he's lost a large number of generals. He's had this whole little, potential coup problem, which he wouldn't have been able to stop if it would have continued on with Prigozhin. And, these things are destabilizing, but it's also destabilizing to the world. And a lot of it has to do with bad policy, bad decisions from both the Biden government and Western European countries that failed to take action early on to avoid this type of a problem. And of course, you combine that with what's happening in Asia with China's threats over Taiwan. They're actually preparing for war while others are kind of sleeping and hoping it doesn't happen. But then when you have these meetings with Biden, Korea, and Japan, that they talk about these issues and they talk about war, about a stronger defense, that means that, look, we're in a very, very, very difficult situation on the global front.
Yeah. No question about that. It is a much more of a Cold War going on internationally right now. I would have to say that in terms of severity, it definitely approaches the situation when Khrushchev was in power. Jim, we've only got about 30 seconds. Can you comment on that and then wrap it up?
Well, yeah, I think, Kim Jong-un is saying he was going to hold hands with Putin in their strategic operation. He's going to, they are going to work together. And unfortunately, that's not good for Russia nor North Korea as they isolate themselves even farther from the world, I think.
Yeah, there you go. I agree 100%. You guys, we're going to be right back to wrap up KER Politics. Up KER Politics. Jimmy and I have been doing this show for quite some time now. I have been doing it since 1995, and the general theme of the program of late has really been the effort that the Democratic Party is putting in to controlling the press so that it will for sure win the election that's coming up in 24. Jim studies this on a daily basis. Jimmy, I'd like you to do us all a favor and tell us what you came up with since the last show on this topic.
Yeah, you bet. So this week has been interesting. Kevin McCarthy announced an impeachment hearing, which is an actual opening an investigation on the Biden family corruption. With that, the White House has Ian Sams, one of the communications, or I'm sorry, from White House legal staff, sent a memo. I believe it had a 14-page annex, but sent a memo to major media outlets asking them to basically suppress information and to scrutinize the GOP impeachment inquiry. Okay. So the White House legal counsel is trying to intimidate the press in order to shape an outcome. And that's in conjunction with Biden's personal lawyers. They're doing the same thing, making public statements, using the threat of the power of the White House to intimidate, influence, and shape the media corporations on the outcome of an impeachment inquiry. And they're actually trying to identify areas that look, you know, like that they're accusing the Republicans of making up and there's no information there. But the reality is there is information. There is a tremendous amount of documented information of direct cooperation with Hunter Biden's businesses, with direct flow of money from foreign entities into the Biden family. And there is direct influence over policy connected to these financial transactions. And that's even out of Joe Biden's own mouth. So that's an interesting move by the White House. And I tend to question whether or not the media will continue. I mean, most of the mainstream, the ABC News, the NBC News, and the Washington Post, CBS, if they'll continue to follow the Democratic line on this, or if eventually they're going to have to break, because it is so apparent of the level of influence and corruption and censorship that the White House has had on the media. And I think people are beginning to see it. And if the media stays with it, it could be very problematic, not only for the Democratic Party, but also for those corporations and the costs and what the impact is on their actual revenues.
Jimmy, these are pretty serious allegations. And what I would like to do to give them a lot more credibility with our audience is, can you tell me where you got this information?
Well, actually, it's being published. I mean, the memo is published now by numerous news agencies. You can go to Fox News, you can go to Washington Post, you can go to many of these of the mainstream outlets, and you can actually see the document that was set up by the White House.
Yeah, you're not going to get much more credible than that source, Jim, and I thank you for doing that.
Yeah, so that's quite interesting. We certainly have the Twitter files. We have all the information of how the government was censoring the COVID, narrative. We have all the information how they influenced the 2020 election by censoring, Meta, Facebook, Twitter files, and all the major news outlets.
Right.
Censoring the Washington Post story on the Hunter Biden computer. I mean, there's so much evidence out there. It's becoming overwhelming to try to cover up, although there are still some journalists trying to do it. But let me just say that the tide is turning right now, Al, against the Bidens. And here's how you can identify that. Washington Post, David Ignatius, he's a Democrat, if you will, talking piece for the Washington Post, definitely a left-wing, majorly respected in that circle news outlet, and certainly not by me, but certainly by others. He's actually saying that Joe Biden's too old to run. He tries to be polite about it, but he's very clear about it, and that Kamala Harris is a bad candidate as well. And New York Times, Ross Douthat, another well-respected leftist journalist, is saying that they are actually, that this is too big of a problem for the Democratic Party, that Joe Biden has to back out. These are powerful voices on the left saying something has to change. So we're seeing a political tide changing right now with Joe Biden and his support with the media. It's interesting to watch.
Well, I think it's a great way to wrap up our program for this week. I am not doubting what you are saying. I'm not sure why anybody would think that.
You can actually read the articles in the New York Times and the Washington Post. Don't doubt me. Actually read them. Or don't even, don't trust me. Just read what they're saying.
I didn't trust you.
Oh, no, I'm not talking to you, Al. I'm talking about others, our listeners out there. They just should take a look at it. And they should look and look at these actual, these articles and this momentum and this shift. And the fear that Joe Biden is going to lose to Donald Trump. It's coming out on a lot of left-wing media outlets, including CNN and even in some cases MSNBC, mm-hmm. as well as New York Post and Washington Times.
Yeah. Well, I would have to say right now that I am still very up in the air as to giving what I think would be an educated guess as to who's going to get the nod for the Democratic nod for the you know, running as president of the United States.
It's getting late in the game for them to pick somebody else.
It's getting late in the game, and I have no idea at this point which way the pendulum is going to swing. Logic will tell me it would be somebody other than President Biden, but logic doesn't seem to be working right now, Jim.
Yeah, there, you got a point there. There is not a logic in what's happening. A lot of logical outcomes of what's happening out there in the
right.
political world. It's crazy, actually, what we're seeing. But I think many people are beginning to wake up to it, and hopefully enough. We don't know if there's enough, but certainly the flow is changing, and the dialogue. And of course, this has to do with things like Joe Biden, lying about being at Ground Zero on 9/11 when he didn't even come back to New York for 9/11. It has to do with him actually saying in the press conference after the G20 meeting in Vietnam that in fact he was, in his visit to Vietnam, that he was going to go to sleep. And his faux pas are becoming embarrassing, more embarrassing every day. And a lot of people are realizing, oh my gosh, the longer he's in control, the less likely they'll be able to put someone in and get the backing. And how are they going to handle that? And I think a lot of people are becoming, on the left, are becoming a little bit, they're a little bit desperate about that. They're afraid that the two of them, that he would actually lose, and this is based on a lot of polling that they do, that he would lose against Donald Trump, and Trump looks like he's he's way ahead in the race for the Republican nomination.
He's way ahead of the race in front of the Republican nomination, but Jimmy, the latest numbers that I saw for him, the poll numbers which I saw for Trump vis-a-vis the entire election process showed him just about even with Biden.
Yeah, well, actually, the latest numbers are showing him like with a little bit of a gain in 2 to 3 points, if not equal, and that's very scary to the Democrats because,
yeah.
In fact, those polls are usually the wrong direction.
Right.
But I want to. There is a movement to get back to America, America First, Make America Great Again, whatever you want to call
right.
it, the MAGA movement.
Right.
And one great example is Mitt Romney announced that he is not running for re-election in the Senate
yeah.
in Utah. And the reason why is because he's representing a minority party aspect of the Republican Party, and that Trump now has, and the MAGA people have, the advantage of the Republican Party. That is a good sign for America, that the old elitist views that are cooperative with globalism, that are all about the corruption and the big money, are
yeah.
beginning to fade in power. Very powerful statement right now.
Actually, I read that this morning in the Seattle Times. I was surprised to see Romney go on the record as saying that today. Surprised, but not totally bewildered, I have to say that. He's kind of, I think
we're done with, we got to wrap it up, Al.
We are at 9:55 right now. You guys have a very great weekend, and we'll see you next week.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.